Welcome to University Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri, Director of Communications and Alumni Relations here at the University of Malta. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research projects, their international networks, about their aims and aspirations. I shall also be hearing from staff and students and visitors to campus about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. I'm very happy to have with me in the studio today on University Matters, Dr. Anthony Licari. Just a few words about my guest. After teaching French at all levels in schools, as well as at the Alliance Française here in Malta, he joined the Department of French here at the University in 1998, where he started lecturing in psycholinguistics, social linguistics, and psychosocial geolinguistics. These were areas of study which he had been researching in at the Paris University of the Sorbonne Quatre and the Sorbonne Saint-René Descartes. These studies he focused then on a doctorate which he read for at the University François Rabelais in Tours, where he obtained his doctorate with a very honourable mention. Dr. Licari has also worked on statistical linguistic elements in the work of Emile Zola, which caught the interest of the Mathematics Society of Malta, which then invited him to present his findings. At present, he lectures, he's a visiting lecturer here at the university. He lectures his students in the subjects already mentioned and also has a great interest in the development of translation and interpreting within the department. Dr. Licari has for many years contributed his expertise also to the work of the police force and the courts of justice, which has led him to assist the French embassy with respect to any French citizen that might find him or herself in difficulties here in Malta. Dr. Licari has contributed many papers on education and language to the Council of Europe meetings of CELV, which are held in Graz in Austria. He has a particular interest in linguistics applied to the areas of tourism, the economy and industry, and has twice been invited by the College of Communication and Business in Budapest to give presentations on language and the economy and language and aggressivity. Many listeners will know Dr. Licari for his opinion columns in the local media, which deal with diverse aspects of Maltese culture, education and socio-politics. Currently, Dr. Licari has turned his research focus on multiculturalism, both international and Maltese. Welcome to the programme, Dr. Licari.
Thank you.
Well, certainly we can see from that very brief and, as usual, rather reductive bio, probably, that your main interest in life is obviously French and French culture and the connected linguistic elements to do with that as well.
That's right.
Perhaps before we go into detail about what your activities are in that area, what your studies are, and your teaching also in that area, perhaps you could give a little bit of a definition for our listeners' benefit as to what these areas of study really involve. I mean, for example, psycholinguistics.
Okay, I'll start with that. Many people ask me that question. And first of all, there are two ideas in the expression psycholinguistics. There's psychology and language. Psychology, as a lot of people know, studies ideas and feelings of the individual, but sometimes of groups. One may speak of the psychology of a nation, for example. Linguistics is an area of study which is much more studied in various departments. Psycholinguistics tries to create a cooperation between psychology and linguistics. And it consists of a number of elements, including development of language, learning, and processes of learning, psychopathology of language. And in relation to this, I try to take my students on hands-on experiences. I was only last Monday with a group of my students at Karen Gregg Hospital, where my students listened to explanations by language pathology experts in this hospital regarding what happens to patients after a stroke and what's done to be able to improve their condition.
The idea of language, of course, on a national level, let's talk about a national level, although obviously within one nation there might be many different languages going on. Language reflects as a reflection of the culture of a country. What is the link between then the study of the linguistics, what's happening to the language, and what is happening in the sort of the broader sense within a country?
In fact, this brings us to social linguistics, which is a rapport between society and language. And the social linguistics deals more with groups and language, sociology and language. And in social linguistics, we study things like adverts, for example, dialect, jargon, and the relation between language and profession. So language changes according to certain influences, internal and external. Language is a living thing. The Maltese language of 100 years ago, like any other language, has developed by influences from tourism, foreign commerce with Malta, and so on. So language changes gradually according to certain influences, even musical influences, songs influence Maltese language, and so on. So it is interesting to study, for example, comparatively, the Maltese of now and French of now and English of now as compared to 100 years ago. For example, when one studies literature, one notices certain differences between the literature of the 17th century, for example, and certain expressions which are used in the literature of the 17th century as compared to modern literature.
I suppose 100 years ago, the influences that would have brought to bear on a national language, though, would be possibly, I'm asking the question really, I really don't know the answer, will be different to the kind of pressures that are brought to bear today because of the sort of the globality of influences. For example, the most obvious one will be, for instance, SMSing, which is now a global phenomenon, which must be influencing every single language practically there is on the planet.
That's very true. There is more influence nowadays on language because of global communication and more traveling, more tourism, as compared to 100 years ago. We could say that 100 years ago there was colonialism, which influenced the local language. In some countries, in fact, colonialism created the phenomenon of Creole languages, which is the influence of the colonialist on the local speech. This became a language on its own, Creole, and I do meet Creole in my work as interpreter with the police and the courts, and I must say within brackets that I'm very happy to work with these people, and I feel very, very respected both by the police and the people in court. I can say that I do meet various types of French, for example. To give you one example, when I am interpreting for people from Ivory Coast, I have to do a lot of research beforehand, because in Ivory Coast there are 17 languages. And each language has a certain difference with another of the 17 languages. To give you one simple example, one Creole in Ivory Coast would say la fille in standard French, while another language would say fila. One Creole in Ivory Coast would say taxi. Another language would say takis. So I don't only have to know French, but its variations.
The French have a reputation for being very traditional in their approach to new words. How are they coping with the new phenomenon of say SMS shortenings and this sort of thing?
In fact, only recently I was given a transcript of a list of SMSs found by the police in the mobile of a person accused of, dealing with some kind of infraction. And it wasn't easy for me to interpret the SMSs, because this is part of social linguistics. When you see an SMS, it could belong to a group of people, for example, 10 people who have a code among themselves. So apart from translating SMSs from French to English or French to Maltese, I had also to justify why I translated that way. So an interpreter in this situation must be ready not just to interpret, but to explain why, among the various possibilities, he or she interpreted in this manner.
I can hardly cope with the usual LOL and the other ones, let alone understand the complications of group coding. That sounds sounds devilish. And how do you find that your students react to this approach to linguistics, to language?
I think that my students react very positively, and I keep asking them, in fact, to put questions to me wherever I'm not clear enough or I'm too pedantic. I sometimes tell my students that rarely they argue with me, and they smile. They think I'm joking. But I do insist that my students argue with me. I'm used to studying in France. I did all my university education in France. And this is what I learned over there. If you want to argue with your lecturer, using a certain courtesy, of course, you have every right to do so. And it would improve the attitude of the lecturer, who would go and search into your question beyond what he knows already.
These are methodologies that it's not part of our culture in Malta, educationally anyway, to argue the toss with a teacher kind of thing.
Yeah.
We haven't sort of reached that that stage yet. So, but it does obviously, that is what should be happening at university. Because
yes, in fact, I, as I have just said, when a student argues with his or her lecturer, it's also to the benefit of the lecturer himself. A lecturer cannot read everything about what's happening in his area of study. There are students who read certain material which the lecturer has not yet encountered, and propose a discussion on what they have just learned. I try to read the latest about research, because among my students there are some very intelligent ones who would tell you that what you're saying used to be true a year ago, 6 months ago, but not today. So a lecturer has be has to be alert to possible questions by students about what's happening now, what happened yesterday, and he has not yet read.
One of the things that caught my eye when I was looking at your very brief bio was this language and aggressivity.
Mm.
What were you actually looking at when you wrote that paper?
The second time I went to Budapest at the College of Communication and Business, I read a paper on language and aggressivity. This paper has been published in Budapest itself and will be published next year in the at the University of West Virginia. In fact, they wrote to me some time ago to give them permission to modify according to the length of paper, of article, because they have several. They're going to publish next year. I try to find subjects for my articles or papers from what's happening around me. I very much believe, in fact, in our university rector's idea of the university's mission as socio-economic. The university receives financial support from the state and gives back a practical reaction to that investment. I keep hearing Professor Juanito Camilleri speaking about this, and I'm very enthusiastic about it. I tend to be a utilitarian, although I do not condemn those who believe in pure research, because that is also necessary. But as far as I'm concerned, I tend to be utilitarian. I think that our studies should all have a relation with practical results in the country. And recently in Malta, there was a debate about political aggressive language. And I said to myself, if possible, I should try as a linguist to help out in this matter by an article where I proposed a rational political language to create more harmony between adversaries. And hopefully I can have some small effect on those politicians who read and who read my article, and perhaps they could try and become more friendly for the sake of the nation, after all.
The other area that you are particularly interested in now, this is your latest thing, is this idea of multiculturalism.
That's right.
Perhaps, again, before delving a little bit deeply into it, perhaps a basic definition of what sort of you see as multiculturalism.
Okay. First of all, I would like to correct a wrong impression of some people who think that enthusiasm for multiculturalism means opening the country's borders to immigration. This is not true at all, but some people believe it. And when I say that I'm doing research on multiculturalism, they tell me, yes, you would like to find ways and means of inviting more immigrants to Malta, which is a wrong assumption. In fact, it's actually the opposite. What I believe by multiculturalism is the learning of the talents of other cultures, learning different cultures, learning from each other. And this is also utilitarian, because what you learn about problem solving in other cultures, you can apply to your own culture. And another thing, my first type of research, which I am doing in cooperation with the University of Sciences Politiques in Paris and the University of Geneva, University of Lausanne, and University of Franche-Comté. I like to mention the fact that I was encouraged to work with the University of Franche-Comté in Besançon, east of France, by the French cultural attaché who has recently left Malta to work in Brazil, who is also professor at the University of Franche-Comté. His name is Serge Borge, and a lot of people remember his presence in Malta with some emotion, because he is of Maltese origin. He had hundreds of friends in Malta. And if I can perhaps influence a little the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in France, who may be listening, I hope that Serge Borge comes back to Malta, not as a cultural attaché, but as ambassador.
What aspects of multiculturalism are you actually looking into in particular? Because obviously it's an extremely wide subject.
Mm-hmm. I am doing research on how multiculturalism can contribute to peace. And the point of departure is that when cultures know more about each other, there's no mystery. Very often hostility is a result of mystery. I don't know you enough, so I'm hostile to you. When we talk, when we discuss, when you tell me about yourself, I realize that I had many preconceived ideas. When you tell me about your talents, about your habits, about what you like to do, I understand you more. Perhaps there are things in common. And when I understand other cultures better, I get closer to them. And there's an increased possibility of peace between cultures as a result of their learning about each other.
What can be done on the practical angle on something like that? I mean, you said you're working with these other universities. Are you coming up with ideas for practical applications?
Oh, yes. One of my conclusions in my research is that I am proposing the setting up in Malta of a center for peace negotiations. This is not a completely new idea. I'm not inventing the wheel. But Malta, strategically placed in the Mediterranean, could do a lot more through the creation of a center for peace through multiculturalism. And I'm sure that other countries would contribute financially for the setting up of this peace center in Malta. And lots of discussions where friction exists between cultures, between countries, they could come to Malta where we could have a setup to improve communication between the adversaries, which would lead, hopefully, to more harmony between conflicting cultures and nations.
And the relationship that Malta has with France, I mean, obviously you did all your studies in France, and I'm sure you have a very close rapport with the French embassy here, and obviously you said, as we said before, you've taught in the Alliance Française. What can you tell me about that, the rapport between Malta and France, really, over the years and now?
I believe that the rapport between Malta and France could improve, but this is something politicians keep saying, so I'm not saying anything new there. I would like to mention at this point an initiative by a colleague of mine and the head of Department of French in Malta, Professor Laurence Sakel, who is promoting the idea of translation possibilities and interpreting possibilities between French and Maltese. And I am hoping to be able to speak about Professor Sakel's initiative in my third paper, which I will read in Budapest in May. So this is one basic practical initiative. The increased rapport between French and Maltese as possibilities of exchange between linguistic exchange between the two countries. Of course, there are unlimited possibilities of improvement. For example, the promotion of French in Malta will lead to the increase of French commerce in Malta, French tourism in Malta. So I am all out for greater rapprochement between Malta and France for cultural reasons, but also for practical, commercial and political reasons.
Exactly. I think we mentioned before this, the idea of the socio-economic importance of language. I mean, certainly that rapport is something that we need to develop. Our students now, actually, several of them are going to French universities even for their Erasmus exchange, which is very positive.
It is very important for students during their studies to be able to spend time abroad, to be able to mix with lots of other foreign students, although there is maybe about 7% of students at this university who are foreign. But living there, having a certain degree of independence, as we know, Maltese families tend to overprotect young people.
The comfort zone.
Yeah. I did not go through that cushy experience myself because when I was 18, I just emigrated to Canada. I came across difficult challenges, above all, a lot of experience, which helped me even in my studies. A lot of people do not believe that the challenges of life are related to the challenges of research. But in fact, in my case at least, there's a definite connection between the challenges I had to overcome as an emigrant in Canada and the challenges of my studies.
Excellent. Well, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time. The time always passes much quicker than one imagines it's going to. I'd like to thank Dr. Anthony Licari for coming to talk to us on University Matters today.
Well, thank you for your invitation.
Thank you for listening to today's program. I do hope you can join us again next week for another in the series University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.